This morning's reading is Psalm 139. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in, behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your right hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. If only you would slay the wicked, O God. Away from me, you bloodthirsty men. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord, and abhor those who rise up against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
Thank you, Karen. Please turn to the person next to you and share what jumped out from the reading.
Cool. Alrighty. We can all hear me? Brilliant. Cool. So what stood out from the reading? He knows us completely. I love that. Yeah. Others? You can't hide from him. No, you can't. Others? He knows us before we're conceived in the womb. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
As a Jesus follower, it's strange to hear the word hate written in the Bible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, totally right. Yeah, if you do hear, yeah, it's odd that we hear hate in the Bible in this moment. Yeah, totally. Not touching on that, unfortunately. I'd love to, though. Yeah. Yeah, he knows us even as we don't know ourselves. He's got the sermon. He's read my notes. It's good. A couple more. Yeah.
The days ordained for me are written in his book.
Yeah, he knows our future. I love that. And last one, Mike. What was that? Oh, no? Nope, sorry. All good. Okay. I'm really excited to talk about this because Psalm 139 is my favorite psalm. And because we're on the holidays, I got to preach on whatever I wanted to. So finally, I don't get a squiffy passage. That's good. But Psalm 139 is a passage that I've thought about often. But recently, when I was meditating on it, God drew me to a question that I'd never considered before. And that question is, what does it mean to know or to be known? And why is it so important for us to be known by others and known by God? Right? I hadn't considered this before. And so I looked at this question and I was like, well, why don't I go through the rest of Scripture and see where else do we see the word know or known? And I found something interesting. So the first thing I notice, yeah, where it appears is quite surprising. So let me read you a few and see if you can figure out what it's implying, the word know, in these moments. The first time we encounter the word know is in Genesis 4, verse 1, and it goes like this. Now Adam knew Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain. Right? And a little bit further on, it says Cain knew his wife, and she conceived. And a little bit further on, it says Rebecca is described as a virgin because no man had known her. And you'd be like, well, okay, this is the Old Testament. What about the New Testament? Well, Luke chapter 1, verse 34, Mary is being approached by the angel telling them that she's going to give birth to Jesus. And she says this, how will this be? Since I don't know men, right? But she's engaged to Joseph. Surely she knows men, right? And so there's this word know. The most common way the Bible refers to the word know, knowing someone, is in the context of sex, right? Therefore, when the Bible uses this word, it's referring to something so much bigger than knowing something about someone, right? It's implying intimacy. It implies relationship and a shared experience. And this is why I think we have this desire to be known and loved, because we're made for intimacy and relationship, primarily with God, but also with others in community. And if we view known like that, then the passages like John 10, you know, the parable of the good shepherd, suddenly becomes so much more powerful and beautiful, right? I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, I lay my life down for the sheep. For the sheep. This is powerful when we realize what being known in the Bible is. It's referring to a deep, safe relationship of love. And I think when you read Psalm 139, as we have, you can hear it in David's voice. You can hear this bit where he acknowledges that he's completely known by God, but that doesn't scare him. It fills him with joy instead. And does anyone know the theologian Tim Keller? Yeah, a few of you guys? He puts it really well. He says, to be loved but not known is... Sorry, I'm losing my thing. Yeah, so to be loved and not known is superficial. To be known but not loved is the scariest thing we have. It's our deepest fear. But to be known and loved is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense. It humbles us in our self-righteousness. And it fortifies us to face any difficulty life can throw at us. Hey, buddy. But here I want to add an observation that I've made that I imagine others have noticed as well. Our culture constantly tells us that we know ourselves best and that no one can tell us who we are, right? We get to decide who we are, right? We've got phrases, what's it like, look inside yourself, trust yourself, or, you know, follow your heart. There's an assumption here. The assumption is that I am the expert on me, right? But are you really? Is that actually the case? You know, have you ever had someone point something out about you that you didn't realize about yourself? Yeah, right? I remember, I've told this story before, but it's such a good illustration. I remember when I was at uni and I was at the Chaplaincy Centre and I was arguing with someone about something theological. Didn't matter. But I was doing it in such an unkind way. And my chaplain, thankfully, he took me aside and kindly and graciously helped me see that I always had to be right and that I had an arrogance problem. I had no idea that that was in me, but he helped me see it. And this was really humbling for me, but it actually revealed something profound. I didn't have perfect self-knowledge. And self-awareness, it doesn't come naturally. Right? And if that is true, then perhaps we need someone outside of ourselves to tell us who we really are. And that is exactly where Psalm 139 begins. You know, You have searched me, O God, and you know me. At the beginning of David's psalm, he acknowledges who knows him best, and it's not himself. It's God. God is the one who knows. And then he goes on to show how God knows his actions, his thoughts, his deep motives, his words, his history, and his future. God knows way more about David than David knows about himself. So while our culture says look inward, David says look upward. All right? And by doing so, David is showing us that our identity does not come from self-discovery. It comes from being known by God and letting him unpack that. Cool. So to understand who we are and what it means to be known, I have recently encountered a tool which I found really helpful. We're big on shapes in this church, eh? You'll notice I've got the whiteboard ready to go. Yeah, okay. So the tool I'm going to use is called the Johari window. Has anyone encountered this before? A couple people? Cool. So I'm going to draw a square. And this square contains and represents you, everything about you. Okay, this is your habits, your thoughts, your motives, your relationships, your job, your dreams. It's all contained within this box. Okay, but not everyone knows everything about you. Right, so I'm going to draw a line that separates it, and I've got another colour pen, and so I'm going to say. Knows, others know is what I'm trying to write, sorry. Others know. Others know. And then others don't know is down below that line. Okay. There are things about you that people don't know about, right? But we're not done. There are also some things that you know about yourself and don't know about yourself. And so we need another line to separate us. Okay? I'm going to write you know and you don't know. And what we have is four quadrants. And each of these quadrants means something that is helpful for us to understand. So we're going to go through each four, okay? The first one, you know it about yourself and others know it about you, right? So these are things, for example, I'm married to Victoria, I have a son called Augustine and I'm a deacon in this church. I know that about myself and so do you guys. You also know that I follow Jesus and I know that about myself. I think most of us in this room know that I don't drink coffee. Well, I don't drink caffeinated coffee, I should say. I know that about myself as well. And this square is the square where you have the most freedom to be who you are. It's the square where, because you know it about yourself, you're able to harness it. And because other people know it about you, you don't have to hide it. This is the square of freedom. And I think this is the square that as we step more into Jesus, this is the square that he wants us to grow. Okay? But that leads us into our next window. Because I think our greatest fear is not failure or anything else. Our greatest fear is being found out. Hey, right? We all manage our impressions, right? We have the version of ourselves at church. We have the version of ourselves at work. We have the version of ourselves online, or the version that only comes out when we're alone. All right? I forgot to write something. I call this the light. In the light section, this area, I'll come to a name in a second. So this one here, where you know it about yourself, but others don't know it about you. Right? This is the area where you're intentionally keeping things from people because you don't want them to find out. Or it may be things you've only just learned about yourself that you're not quite ready to share with others yet. And these could be small things. So for example, I imagine most of you guys don't know, I'm missing a tooth. Right? And I've got two more that need to be crowned. Okay? But they can also be our deep emotional things, or the things we keep secret from others, or our feelings, or the things we're ashamed of or embarrassed of. What this is not is, this area is not the lies we're telling, but just simply the truth we're withholding. And so it's often called the avoided or the, the hidden area. There's a problem with this area. The problem with here is that it is a part of you that you're suppressing. It's an area of your life that you are not allowing to be fully expressed. And therefore, you are unable to be your authentic self in this space. In all situations, there's a limit to the freedom you have. And so, what could we do about it? Genuinely, I'm asking, how could we move stuff from here to here?
Confession,
I love that. You have to be vulnerable and open up to those to whom you can trust, right? And when we do this, it brings things out of the hidden place and into the light, right? And this is why confession and vulnerability are so powerful. It has the power to it breaks the power of things over you that need to be dealt with. Or it releases you to express good parts of you that are being suppressed. So I'll give you an example of this. Time to go vulnerable and share something about my inner soul that no one else knows. I have a fear of what people think of me when I'm dancing. Okay?
You gonna
dance for us? No, I'm not going to dance. Because I avoid dancing at all costs. And I make excuses to not dance because I'm afraid of what people will think about me, right? And it stifles my social life, right? And it limits the fun I could have because I keep this hidden and I'm not honest with people about what's going on. It's hidden, but it's still calling the shots, right? And now I've just outed myself, so we'll see what happens after this moment, okay? Cool. So my question that I'm asking, what this is inviting you into is, who in your life can you be vulnerable with and open up? Because there's freedom there. Time to move on to the scary one. The scary one. Things you don't know about yourself, but others know about you. Oh, I know. You know? This is scary because, like, there are things that people know about you and you're unaware, and yet they are still influencing your life. This I call your blind spot. Right? One of the most humbling truths about being a human is that there are parts of ourselves that are a mystery to us. Right? We don't have perfect self-knowledge. David got this, right? At the beginning of a psalm where he says, "You have searched me, O God, and you know me." Right? And yet we have this incredible inclination in our culture that says that because our wants and our needs and our desires are so loud and present within us, that we must know ourselves well. We must know ourselves the best. But the reality is we're coming to know ourselves more, and others are coming to know us more, and that we have blind spots. All right? The reason why I love Psalm 139 and this Johari window is it forces us to realize that the knowledge of ourselves is not perfect. Right? It forces us to realize that others see stuff that is true about us and yet we are unaware of it. You know? We need to be able to open up and be available to the reality that we're still learning who we are and that others might have insight into things that we haven't noticed about ourselves. We need to be open and available to the reality that we have blind spots. And so how do we move stuff from this section to this section? You need deep relationship. You need to have people in your life that know you well and enough trust and love with them to ask, and to ask, where is my blind spots that would be valuable for me to know? To give them permission to speak into your life. So I did this. I asked Caleb, prior to the sermon, what's a blind spot I have? What's something I don't know about myself? Because I lived with him for, was it 5 or 6 years? Can't remember. A while, long time. He knows me well, and I love him, and he loves me. So it's safe to ask him. And he pointed out that when I'm not confident in what I'm talking about, I had no idea about this about myself. But when I'm not confident, I go on my tiptoes, and I start wandering around. Right? I had no idea I did this. But when I am confident, I stay flat-footed, and I'm in one place. I didn't realize this about myself, but I hold tension in my calves, and that's why it's happening, right? When I'm nervous about something. And it's been really interesting since he mentioned that to observe in myself when I'm confident and when I'm not. It's a lively indicator. No idea, right? And this is a bit vulnerable for me to confess because I preach here, and I'm sure there's plenty of times I've watched back sermons and I see myself just, you know, going, oh, okay, you know, it's good, right? But now it's in the light. Now I can focus on it and go, oh, okay, I can do something about this. The other one for me is that I grew up in a wealthy family. I grew up with wealth, and that influenced how I thought about money and how I thought about the world. And again, I had no idea that was governing my way I thought until I met Victoria, and she helped me see the way I saw money. And now I've changed that, and I've found freedom in that. Right? So my question is to you, who in your life have you given permission to speak into your life and see, help you see who you really are? That's the scary one. But there's another slightly scary one as well. You don't know it about yourself, and no one knows it about you. Okay? And yet, it still impacts your life anyway and still calls the shots. Okay? How do we access this section? I call this the unknown unknown. The unknown unknown. So there's only one real way to access this place. Well, there's two. One, you can put yourself in new situations. And that will help reveal things, but it doesn't get to the deep things. The only way that you can know what's going on deep within your soul that no one else knows is through prayer. Because God knows all of you completely, including the square. Right? And so the only way to make progress in my life, in my relationships, in my understanding of the world, in my capacity and ability to be a productive and positive person is by getting in touch with God through prayer and through spiritual formation, because God is the only one who has answers here. The way he does that is two ways. One, he will reveal it first to yourself, and then it ends up in this square. And the encouragement is to bring it into the light, right? Conviction belongs here. The other way as he does it is he will reveal it to others. This may be a prophetic word, or he may help others see things in you, right, that are good or bad. And so it ends up here. And so you need to be asking people, because God is speaking to others about you as well. You know? Right? I've got an example here as well. So one time I was having spiritual direction with Caleb a few years back, and we were diving into why I always feel like I have this need to be capable for things. And we were trying to figure it out, but we just couldn't understand what was going on in me. And so we paused right then and there and prayed and asked God to reveal it to me. And God then revealed that the reason why I have this desire to be capable is because then if I could just do things, people might love me. And then God revealed a deeper thing. I didn't believe I was lovable. All right? I had no idea. And yet it was calling the shots this whole time. God brought it here for me, and then I was able to talk about it with Caleb. And from that day on, I've been finding increasing freedom in this area. I'm so thankful God knows me completely. All right? What I love about the Johari window in Psalm 139 is it shows us that our self-awareness, ironically, is not just about ourselves, right? In fact, very little about what we do in life is just about ourselves. Instead, it's about relationship. All of these three that is about you learning about yourself involves others, right? Because we weren't created to do life alone. No one's an island, right? That's the saying, as it goes. We're made for relationship with God and with others in community. And so the question is not whether or not we're in relationship with others. It's whether those relationships are good or unhealthy, right? If I remain unaware of my fears, my pride, my wounds, and my blind spots, they don't just stay inside of me. They manifest. They leak out into all of my relationships. And they affect my marriage, my friendships, my parenting, my church family. But as God brings those things into the light, as I invite trusted people to reveal my blind spots, as I confess to them vulnerably, it means that my relationships are places of healing rather than places where my hidden struggles continue to hurt others. All right? That's why I think the Christian life is about growing this square. All right? To be known, to have things that I know about myself and that are known by others. Not because everyone needs to know everything about me, but it means that I'm becoming increasingly honest before God, before myself, and before others, and trusted people. So here's the real question, though. Why would I risk doing any of all that, right? Why would I invite someone to point out my blind spots? Why would I confess what I'm trying to keep hidden? Why would we pray to God, "Search me, O God"? Like, this is vulnerable. It's because God has made it safe to do so. On the cross, he carries every truth about us, right? Our sin, every hidden thought, every blind spot, every failure. Like, there's nothing God doesn't know, right? He knows us completely. This isn't about God needing to know us better. The invitation instead is for you to increasingly know yourself as God knows you and to allow trusted others to know you too. This is why David can pray, "Search me, O God," because he's not afraid of what God will find, because he already knows that he is loved by the one who knows him completely. And so I'm going to leave you with three questions that I want you to ponder this week and actually start taking action on, okay? The first, who has permission in your life to lovingly point out your blind spots? I saw that tap of a wife's knee just then. Second one, who are you honest enough with to bring what is hidden into the light? Who can you trust to do that with? It's not for everyone, but find the person you can trust to do that with. And finally, how are you making space for God to search your heart through prayer, scripture, and spiritual formation? Because the more we understand, the more our understanding of ourselves comes into alignment with God's understanding of us, the freer we become, right? Not for our own sake, not just for our own sake, but also for the sake of every relationship God has given us. And so let me finish with praying David's final words, and feel free to take them on board yourself. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Amen.